You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
What is up, everyone? Jose Youngsio, the MMAfighting.com, here for another Monday episode of the A-Side Live Chat. I know we've been trying to bring you guys these episodes 3 days a week now. That train is still rolling on. But for this special Monday edition, we are joined by UFC Hall of Famer Uriah Faber, making his return. Last time he was on was July. We had a nice conversation. So, Uriah, you're here. You're here to plug a movie that you've made. I'm sure we'll talk about it as the episode goes on. But first, before we get into the questions, how we've talked about a little bit off air, but how's quarantine life been for you? I know your daughter's 1 year old. You said you've enjoyed time with her, but how has this pandemic been hitting you so far?
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. The future is the question. I mean, we never really seen anything like this in the world as far as an economic reaction. And then it's harder to say, like, how severe everything is out there. It seems like from the numbers they're saying that it's something that is having an effect. I mean, the numbers are getting smaller. It seems like I know a bunch of people that had the virus, at least five, and they said it was a minor flu and a small fever and then had kind of a lingering cough. People around them didn't get it. So, it's a scary thing, but I feel like, the show must go on at some point,
Uriah, when did you have to shut down your gym how has that affected, a lot of people, the people who attend it, both fighters and, anyone else who takes classes, at your gym? How have you been trying to keep in touch with everyone?
Well, we shut it down, right when we were asked to. Or suggested to, and then and we've got some online Zoom classes that we're holding, a schedule throughout the week, and then we've got a lot of our trainers are putting stuff up on Instagram, and a lot of people have their memberships on free. Some people want to continue to pay for the greater good. The fighters are all kind of doing their own thing. Like, we had two people possibly that were going to fight. Darren Elkins was scheduled to fight on May 2nd, and then Sarah McMahon, they're talking about getting her a fight on one of the May cards as well. So they're doing their individual workouts with one-on-one, people. It's been really strange. I mean, guys are meeting up at the park and just doing their best they can to stay in shape.
Well, you brought up, we've had a lot of fighters on, and they've talked about, like, they've been either in fight camps or known someone in fight camps or talking about, like, their families and stuff. And you bring up the economics of it. And I know when fans think of you, they think of your title fights, but then they also think of all the business ventures you've kind of pushed forward. You've been one of the more forward thinking fighters in the game. So when this pandemic first starts to hit, is that the first thing you're starting to think of, like, how is this going to affect all of my businesses right now?
My first thought is, okay, I'm going to do some research on how dangerous this is and is at risk, et cetera. You've got family and friends and everyone that could be at risk, supposedly. And there was a pandemic in 1918 that took out people. Like, that's a scary thing. So you have to take it serious. And so that's the first thought. And then, we have social media these days. We have news getting thrown at us from all different directions. So I was trying to look at a bunch of different sides of it. And, it seems like it's serious, but it seems like it's more common. It's more like the flu than it is like the Spanish flu that took out 50 million people. So that was the first thing I looked at. You have a family that you want to watch out for. And then once this thing goes on and you start to think of the bigger picture, then you start to say, okay, how is this going to affect people? I mean, I know a lot of people are going to lose jobs. I mean, a lot of people without work, and that's a scary thing as well.
Well, as you're right, you've been on the show before, aka you've on the show every single Monday. We, of course, have fan questions coming in. You can leave your question on Twitter or that site or MMAfighting.com. You can find the post on the site. You can leave questions for Uriah. Hopefully, Andre Feely can join us as the show goes on. But Casey, our director in the back, what's one of our first questions for Mr. Faber?
Cool. All right. What do we got here?
We haven't screened these, so these are the first time we've screened these.
These are uncensored. Right.
Send me uncensored.
No. Our readers are so decent. They're so decent, so intellectual. As again, you've been on
the show.
Well, Faber and Feely, awesome. We're still trying to get Andre. I'm sorry. Question for Faber. Oh boy, coming in hot right off the ship.
Oh, shoot.
When you're on a sinking ship, the lifeboat only has one space for one person. Who gets it? Dom Cruise or TJ? Also, how do you like Aldo's chances at bantamweight? So, hot question right off the bat, Uriah. Who do you save, Dominic Cruz or TJ Dillashaw on a sinking life ship?
You know what? I've actually got some respect for Dom Cruz. I'd take Dom, I think, on this one.
And second part of the question, how do you like Aldo's chances at bantamweight?
I think they're great. He looked amazing at the, at the weigh-in. I thought he was going to look really decrepit, and he just looked like a super lean bodybuilder and recovered pretty well. So, he's a force to be reckoned with. No matter what, I think he can do well.
If I could just follow up on the Dom thing, I assumed you would say Dom as well because. Like, professionally speaking, is it kind of weird, for lack of a better word, how close you guys are? I mean, you've been in the cage for, like, almost a combined hour, plus all the promotion you guys have done together, plus the Ultimate Fighter, plus you guys go all the way back to your WEC days. Is close the right word? Like, again, just being professional when you're talking about someone like Dominic Cruz?
Yeah, I mean, he and I can have a conversation. I've had discussions with him before where, I think back in the day, he always had kind of a chip on his shoulder about me, and that's gone. He's got his own successful career. He's got, world championships and job outside of the fight space. And so I feel like I was kind of always fielding a guy that was like had a little animosity for no reason. But at the end of the day, he's actually a decent guy, and he's put a lot of hard work into what, has become a great career for him.
And still one of the more polarizing, I'll say, commentators in the game. I personally like his. I'm curious what you've been around him for so long. Is what we see on TV how he is even behind the cameras? He seems one of these guys that's not I've seen him at Media Day interviewing fighters just to understand their mindset going into fights so he can talk about it on air. So is he that meticulous behind the scenes too from the moments you've been around him?
I honestly haven't watched any of that. I mean, I'll watch the fights that I want to fight, the fights I'll watch, and I don't go and look at anything else. So I haven't seen much of it, to be honest. I mean, he seems like he does an okay job when he's actually commentating fights. That's the only thing I ever see.
Sure. Well, thanks so much for the question. Casey, we got any other?
Oh,
yeah. I'm sure we have a million. I'm also going to call Andre in a few seconds here. I got a notification that he might be ready to hop on, too.
All right. Let me get another question up. One moment. Let's go this way. Oh, it kind of answered this one, but let's go ahead and talk about it a little more.
Faber versus Aldo, 135 from Rob Holland on the site. First off, big California kid fan. Thanks for doing the show, both of you guys. We keep having this idea online of a certain bantamweight showdown. Uriah or Mr. Faber, would you be down for a fight with Jose at bantamweight? And what would be different this time at this weight? Uriah, we've talked about this a few times on this show. We've tried to fantasy match make a bantamweight Grand Prix with all of this, the drama going on at the top of the division. Dominic Cruz might supposedly was going to place Jose Aldo in a title fight. Aljamain Sterling, Corey Sandhagen supposedly going to fight Marlon Moraes, Peter Yan. We've been kind of trying to fantasy match make a possible bantamweight Grand Prix, and we were all in agreement last show that we would love to see you guys run it back at 135 after your first fight at 145. So would that be a fight you'd be interested in down the road, whether there's a title on the line or not?
Possibly. I mean, that's a big fight. Aldo's a tough cookie, and the last fight where we went to battle, he annihilated my leg. So I definitely have to take a lesson from that first fight. But he's a big guy for the weight class. I'm a big guy for the weight class. I always felt like he was a lot bigger than I am, but the fact that he was able to get down to 135, that's pretty impressive. So that's a good one. Frankie Edgar's a good one. That's another one. There's so many good matchups back there. I mean, unfortunately, I'm not going to be fighting a ton longer, if at all. I mean, I've got a personal goal when I turn 40 to hit, four fights after 40, and I'm too into that. Could I go more? Sure, absolutely. But do I have to do either? Not necessarily. So That would be a good match. There's a bunch of good matches.
Uriah, are you in favor of, like, you know, it's an idea that's been discussed over in, like, Bellator and things like that, and I don't know if the UFC would ever do it, but kind of like, you know, the veteran Legends League where they match up, you know, fan favorite guys, fighters with big names that are, you know, outside of title contention, sort of more outside their ranks at this point. Are you ever in favor of the UFC implementing a division like that, like a Legends League?
No, I don't think so. I mean, look, if you can't compete as an older athlete, then you know, too bad. You missed your opportunity. I'm a guy that has stayed in great shape, and I haven't taken too much abuse throughout the years, and I felt like I could. You know, last fight didn't go my way, but I was having a very, very good first round, and I got too comfortable and got caught by a really dangerous guy. But, you know, if you can't compete at the highest level, in the UFC at least, that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to find out who's the baddest dude in the world. Then, yeah, that's kind of the case. I mean, Bellator does a great job putting on some awesome fights also, but, you know, I'm in it for the cream of the crop situation. And you know, if I can't compete, you can't compete. But at this point, I feel like I could. And, you know, my last two guys I fought were 26. I won one, I lost one. And one of the guys was in the top 15. The other one was in the top three. So there you have it.
Yeah, a lot of guys with your name, I would think, like, you know, wouldn't want to fight like a Peter Yan. You know, might want to angle for a more well-known guy who's, you know, not as up and coming as him. And yet you jumped right into that. And, you know, obviously we commend you for that. But a lot of us think that's just crazy.
Yeah.
Well, I see Andre has joined us. Have you seen him, Casey?
Yeah. Let me get Andre. Oh, hold on a second. Let me get Andre.
First of all, nice books behind you, sir.
Bro, the first thing I was going to say is that Essex County? Oh, shit.
You know it, man.
I thought I was looking at my own background. Holy shit.
I see that stack of Hellboys next to you, too. I was going to.
Oh, that is dude. I got a bucket. I've been working hard on that thing, dude.
My God. First time on bookshelf envy of a guest on the A side.
Dude, I got a couple things going. And then I got the omnibus. I got the omnibuses over here, dude. Like the coffee table books over here.
We'll talk after the show, my man. We will talk. We will compare. We'll compare notes.
Nerd out after the show, boys. Come on.
Sorry.
Be professional.
This is what all my MMA interviews devolve into. It's just comic book talk, man.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Andre. I know you guys have a movie coming out, Alex. Yes. I know I had a few questions. Casey, I'm sure, has a million questions, considering he's the director, cameraman behind the scenes. I know our own Damon Martin's probably watching, waiting for us to talk about it. So what's this movie you guys, the two of you, have coming out as Casey plugs the air horns? Whoever wants to start, how did this come about? What's the movie about? I know Andre's actually in the movie, so I don't know if he wants to take the lead on this, or Uriah, you are one of the men behind the scene. But yes, tell us about this movie. You guys are both tied to.
Favors a producer. You can take the lead on this, dude.
No, you know, I've been learning about the entertainment industry for a long time. You know, my longtime manager, Mark Schulman, you know, under him for 9 years, I've been learning about how things work. And I put together a team of guys that we've been building up on projects. And this one was actually kind of late to the game. We have a bunch of other scripts and life rights and documentaries and things that we're working on. And this was an opportunity to have a movie that could kind of flex all our muscles. And everyone involved made it kind of a passion project. So, you know, there's a lot of high-level actors in there, working actors that aren't necessarily the bankable international stars that you would see, but have a lot of talent. And then the director, Jared Roxburgh, actually met him through the MMA space, and the producer who actually came up with the concept to do this whole thing, Rick Lee, he's in the MMA space. Mm-hmm. You know, me as the producer was just putting the pieces together, getting guys like Andre Feely, who's had aspirations to act for a long time, an opportunity, and it was really cool, man, to see the whole thing come together as just not only a great product, but something that can move us forward in the business is pretty awesome. And the movie is about a robbery on a marijuana farm out in Northern California. There's a bunch of twists and turns. It's a slow burn. It starts out, you know, kind of slow, and next thing you know, it's high action and high intensity.
Andre, now you're in this movie as I'm just looking at Diego Beltran, I believe is the name of your character, which I think we'll all pretend is an homage to Ultimate Fighter 1 champion Diego Sanchez and former UFC heavyweight Joey Beltran. I assume that's some sort of secret shout out thing. Andre, tell us, how conditional was your casting in this movie on you getting that Uriah Faber tattoo on your leg? You can tell us. You're alive now. You can tell us. I believe SAG would, you know, if you want to send a complaint to SAG, I think I don't think they would approve if that was in your contract that you had to do that. I don't think that's legal.
Some sort of weird, like casting couch type thing. Where, like,
we're not doing the gas couch. The casting tattoo shop is better.
Yeah. No, the tattoo. I love the air horns. The tattoo. Sorry, my voice is kind of fucked right now. My allergies are no joke. The casting couch. Let me tell you about my Hollywood.
That's why I feel it's gonna get to the movie biz.
Yeah, I can't wait to be a producer. No. I got the tattoo without telling anybody. I had it booked and I just wanted to get it done. I have a couple more spots on my leg, and I was like, "Yeah, his face is as good as anybody else." But the tattoo, the movie was already wrapped up, so no conditional parts. But I think that the part came pretty naturally for me. I've grown up in Northern California, you know, like I've grown up around a bunch of like dudes who grew weed as a family business, dudes who, you know, like I got moved from Seattle to Northern California when I was like 11, and I got moved to this little town where growing weed is like the family business. And, you know, as a kid growing up, it was always like, oh, this guy just got robbed, or like, so-and-so's about to crop out. Like, yeah, he's on edge right now because everybody knows, like, but, you know, it was like, so it was easy to get into the character because I'd grown up around that type of stuff. And I think it's a real good representation of Northern California and of how the weed market had been here for a long time. And, you know, there's a lot of places who probably there's a lot of people from places that's probably not their reality. So it's cool to kind of get to show that.
Mm. Question for both of you. You obviously have seen movies. You've seen a movie or two, but what's the biggest misconception you had going into this? Like this is your first movies you guys have done together. What's something that you thought would be easy that wasn't, and what's like some of the challenges that have come up that you weren't expecting in making this movie?
Well, for me, this was you know, we had to make the most of every penny of this thing. We did a great job with that. I wish I could say that I did any of the heavy lifting, but I didn't. You know, I was kind of the outside guy that got to put things together. You'll see my car in there. I got Feely in there. I got my boy Mike Boy in there. I helped raise most of the funding and the majority of the funding, and you know, agreed on the project and read the script and enjoyed the script. So, you know, I know that I was there one day and Andre was like, you know, he had something to do with his girl back home, and like things were going. Yeah, this is a film, but we're also working extra long hours, and so he could probably attest more to like what it was like on set. But I've been on set before. I've been on set on big movies and small movies, and it's just a grind. It's not a grind like you get to get it all over with. It's like a slow like process, and so that I think is you're just reminded that it's a tedious thing, and the director, that's his baby. He's, you know, Jared's there making sure that people are focused and in tune, and they're not just walking through the motions, and so I saw a lot of that. The other thing I didn't even predict was, especially because we had such a tight-knit crew, was there was literally like tension on the set with people like not working well together, and you know, like a bunch of stuff that I guess is pretty status quo for the movie industry. I mean, it makes sense. You know, got all these dramatic people in one place, but you know, it was fun to see all that unfold, especially Feely being you know, as grounded for a guy with head tattoos and a missing tooth as can be, you know?
Yeah, I would say the same thing, man. That's what surprised me is, The thing that surprised me about the hard part that surprised me, that I thought would be easy, is how long the days are, how much work goes into it. Like, I'm used to doing two or three practices a day where I'm fist fighting people. So I'm like, man, I can act all day, whatever. But you're putting in 10, 12 hour days, man. Like, you're grinding for an actual whole fucking day. Like, you and it's hard because you might have a scene at 9 a.m. and then you might not be needed again till 4 p.m. But you got to be on set. You got to be a part of it. You got to be ready when they call you. Like, you got to be ready all day, you know? So it's a long grinding day. It's a tedious day. And especially being the athlete on set, I don't want to be like the fighter guy who came in and couldn't act. So, like, sure. I want to be ready. I want to do a good job. So it's like, you're basically just like, it's like hurry up and wait, you know? It's like being staged before a fight, but it could be 8 hours, you know? Like, and like Faber said, like, there was we filmed throughout this week, and a bunch of my friends and my girl and her friends, they all went to go do this, like, they all went to, like, this cannabis cup, this High Times cannabis cup. They were all going to kick it and, like, have a weekend of it or whatever. And I'm like, oh, cool. Like, this is our day off. Like, I'll just drive back home. Like, we're, like, 3 hours from Sacramento. And the director was like, nah, you can't do that. I'm like, what the fuck do you mean? Like, I can drive home. It's not a big deal. He's like, no, because, like, exactly how you look right now, we need you to look tomorrow for continuity's sake. So, like, in case you get in a fight, in case mm-hmm. you get a car wreck, in Jeez. Case you do something. And I'm like, and I'm really fucking annoyed because I want to go hang out, but I'm like, he's got a good fucking point.
He was pissed. I was like, there. Yeah. He was pissed. Yeah,
I was fucking annoyed. I was really annoyed.
We've been working like
4 12-hour days in a row, and then it was like, all right, cool, I'm gonna drive home. We'll be back tomorrow in the morning. And they're like, nah, you have to stay in the house in the middle of the woods and do nothing for another 12 hours. Like, I was really fucking annoyed. But honestly, it's like, that's just part of it, man. It was well worth it. The part that was easier than I thought was the actual acting. I was like, unless I watch the, I mean, don't get me wrong, I could say this now and then we watch the movie tomorrow and I fucking suck. Like, there is that chance. But from where I'm sitting, I felt like it went pretty well, and it wasn't as hard as I thought. Like, I didn't know what it was going to be like to try to do an emotional scene in front of 12 people and be vulnerable and try to, like, you know, I didn't know if I was going to suck or not. Like, I didn't think I was going to, but until you really do it, you don't know. Until it's like action and there's lights in your face and there's a girl in front of you and she's teared up and you're trying to be emotional too. And you're like, that part came easier to me than I thought. But the actual days were tough, dude. It was long days, and it was a lot of work.
So something we'll see more down the road from you, I would imagine.
Acting. I hope so. I really hope so, man. Like, I plan on it. Like, acting has been something I've always been passionate about. Right by the Faber tattoo, I got a Daniel Day-Lewis tattoo. Like, I'm a huge, I'm a huge movie guy. I'm a huge, like, I have certain actors that I just, like, idolize, man. Like, I really would like to keep acting, yeah, for sure.
Did you watch that Phantom Thread?
I haven't seen Phantom Thread.
Oh, it's on Netflix. It's on Netflix now. Check that out.
Okay, dude, because I was trying to get it on Amazon Prime, and you could only rent it if you had Stars or some bullshit. Dude, I just watched Honey Boy. Holy shit, dude.
Oh, that was good.
Dude, have you talked to Joseph Benavides about that movie? He'll talk to you for about 3 hours.
Dude, I've been talking to Joseph Benavides every day about it. That movie made me fucking – I'll cry right now, dude. I'll break down right now.
What movie is it?
It's called Honey Boy. It's like Shia LaBeouf wrote it about
himself,
his own childhood. Yeah. And then he plays his own like alcoholic, emotionally abusive dad. And it's just like, woo, dude, that line where he says, the only thing my father ever gave me of any value was pain. And now you want to take that away from me. Like, I have never, ever felt a movie line the way I felt that in my whole life. Like, holy shit, dude. Woo. Shia LaBeouf is a national treasure, dude.
So now you guys watch movies with, like, a different appreciation for the process going into it. Like, when you see these movies that move you on the screen, but you probably are now thinking, like, wow, that, you know what goes on behind the scenes to lead up to that, I would imagine.
Oh, you go ahead, Faber.
Yeah, you know, all my favorite movies are just movies, like you said, that you feel something, whether you're feeling like laughing the whole time or you're like just on edge or whatever. So yeah, I've always been kind of like that. You know, my favorite movies are, a lot of them have some drama in them, you know? And, you know, I know Feely, I hear Feely, we had a big director who's signing on to do our next project, and he came to my house, and we watched our Green Rush movie together with him, and he does big, you know, $100 million films, and you know, it was fun to see him and Feely talking shop, because Feely is really dorks out on this stuff, you know. I'm more on the backside.
I would like to think I nerd out about. I don't dork out about anything.
Yeah, you dork out, man.
But I fucking nerd out about movies and comic books, for sure.
You guys want to say a funny story. Feely gets a gold tooth one time. He's missing his other tooth. I think it was silver or gold tooth. I can't remember. I go, oh, let me get this for. I think it was.
I got
it was
gold Twitter. Fangs.
Gold I think fangs. It was Twitter at the time. Gold fangs. I don't know if it's Instagram or Twitter. It was a long time ago. I go, oh, let me get this. I did a slow mo, like a tour of his mouth with the missing tooth and the gold fangs and all this. And then I just put teeth problems and I put it on my social media. He got so pissed. He's like, really? Really?
I wasn't pissed as much. I was like, dude, you just posted teeth problems to a million followers. Like, you're a fucking bad person, dude.
Back in the day, if you wore gold teeth, because they, you know, they had cavities, they put those over them so they didn't hurt their teeth and they chew, you know?
Times have changed.
Someone in our comment section wants to know how they can watch the movie during this quarantine times.
It's on demand. You can order it through Redbox. UDH with the high definition. You can order it there. It's
basically anywhere you rent movies. Anywhere you can rent movies at. Like, I think I'm sure Amazon Video as well. Like all the places you rent movies.
But tomorrow, not today.
Yeah.
Tomorrow.
The trailer, I think, has been available on YouTube for a while. Green Rush, and that's tomorrow, so April 14th, right?
That's it. Yep. Yeah. We originally, before the quarantine, we're gonna do our premiere in Seal Beach, the one in Sacramento, but we're gonna do it on 420. But
I was gonna say, like, wait a week. It's right there, branding right there.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah, the virus killed that one.
Yeah. Is it harder to watch replays of your fights or watch yourself on camera in a movie?
Depends on how the fight went.
Yeah, makes sense. Good answer.
That's fair. Yeah, I knew how the movie was going to go before I fucking started it. The fight's just chaos, dude. Nah, I don't know. Probably a fight. A bad fight is... It probably goes like a bad fight... is the hardest to watch, and then the movie, and then a good fight. Because even a good fight, you're still picking your technique apart. And a movie, I'm just like, oh God, I hope I don't. Oh God, I should have done this different. You know, like.
Well, I was gonna say, because we had Anthony Smith on the show, and he says no matter what fight he watched, he thinks he sucks. He thinks he's the worst fighter in the world. Like, he's like, even when I knocked out Shogun, I thought I was the worst fighter I'd ever seen in my life. So I'm curious if you guys are like that too.
I'm the opposite, man. I'm delusional about stuff. Here's my reaction to the Peter Yan fight. I'm like, dude, I had his ass. You know?
mine is somewhere in between. Like, I watch my fight in Sacramento, and which is like my favorite fight memory I have to date. And I watch myself like land that cross kick. And I'm like, damn, that's the dopest cross kick anyway. Like, I'm the greatest featherweight of all time. And then, but like. Everything leading up to that, I'm just like, oh God, that's ugly. Like, why are your legs so skinny? Why are your feet so big? Why are you moving? You move like I watch myself move, and I move all like slunky, and like I hate everything about my fighting until I get like a finish, and then I'm like, whoo-hoo! I'm like, damn, I'm the best ever.
Yeah, Corey Sandhagen's quote was, I'm my own favorite fighter, so you're on the same boat as him.
Yeah, hell yeah, dude. Sandhagen is one of my favorite. Bantamweights, dude. Sandhagen is a fucking dark. I think Sandhagen is really underrated. I think he's going to be a problem at that division for a long time, dude. Like he has some of the best striking. I think he might be one of the best strikers in the game right now. And then he fought a Sun Tzu and out grappled him, out scrambled him, and I was like, okay, dude, this motherfucker. He's a problem. I really love the way Sandhagen fights, dude. Straight up.
Faber, what are your thoughts on Mr. Corey Sandhagen, someone in your weight class?
Yeah, he's good, man. Nice guy, too. I think he came out and trained with us. I think Feely, did he come out back in the day?
I think he might have came out and trained before. I invited him recently. He was supposed to come out again at some point this year before this whole apocalypse happened.
He came out a long time ago. But dude, yeah, he's a good fighter. But I'm gonna tell you, dude, this weight class right now, there's so many tough guys. I mean, you take the old guys, you got how many champions do you have? Former champions do you have that are still in the mix, like that are still fighting for titles and stuff? You know, Dom and Frankie and Aldo and.
Well, I'll present it this way. Someone asked Corey Sandhagen this when he was on the show. Now that we have you, Uriah, I was gonna wait for this, but since you brought it up, someone asked Corey Sandhagen how the top five right now bantamweights in the UFC would compare to the top five in the WEC days. If there was a time machine and they could fight, how did the top five of those two weight classes stack up? So you're talking like yourself, Cruz, like Brian Bowles, Wineland, like those guys.
Miguel Torres.
Torres, of course, compared to the Sterlings, the Sandhagens, the Jans, the Marais, Joe B, of course. So looking through the annals of time, how would those two, that top five of those two eras compare?
You know, people always talk about like the different eras, like go way back, like to, fighting so much different now than it was then. It's really not when it comes to the individual. Like it's a mental battle in there. I mean, sure, there's maybe some new skills learned, but fundamentals are winning fights, and then really tough dudes with you know some genetic gifts and with a mental attitude and everything else. So I don't know. It'd be fun to see. I mean, the fact that I don't know how many of the guys right now that are the up and coming guys are going to have as long and successful careers as guys like Dominic and Frankie and Aldo myself. Benavidez. I mean, we're in title contention our whole careers, really. So, I mean, well, that's to be said. There's been guys that were Phil Brony's an example. He was the man at like one point. You know, if you remember that? But then there's guys that have been like a Randy Couture that were the man their whole career.
Yeah.
So who knows?
Well, as always, Casey, we've asked maybe one question and we went on a long tangent. For usual, won't be the A-side final tangent. So do we have any other questions for
the fans? Bring on the trolls. Bring on the trolls.
Sure.
I love battling trolls, dude.
Trolls. The trolls are probably having the best time of their life in this quarantine.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, they are active.
What are you guys?
They're probably masturbating and picking on people that can never get back to them.
And then, of course, telling Khabib he's scared to fight Tony Ferguson.
Yeah, right.
Are you guys?
Yeah, Khabib's real scared.
That sounds like a fucking typical day for me on quarantine. Not the Khabib part, just the other parts, dude.
The trolls.
Yeah.
Not the Khabib part, but all the other stuff. Yeah, dude.
All right, Casey, what was that question you pulled up from at KKD113 on Twitter? Ask Uriah if he thinks Cruz can be champion again or if he's past his prime. So can Dominic Cruz be champion again in 2021, I'll say. We don't know when this quarantine will end, Uriah.
I think he probably could, depending on the path. I mean, it just depends on the lineup. Now, could he go through the whole roster of fighters and beat everyone? No. But is there a way to jockey to get it? Yeah, I mean, you got Cody Garbrandt in there. He's got Cruz's number, and he's reignited with his body feeling good and his spirit and his mind in the right place. You've got guys like Jan, and you've got, you know, an Aldo. We never got to see a Frankie or an Aldo fight a Cruz. That'd be a tough fight, you know.
I've been calling for Frankie Edgar, Dom Cruz forever.
Yeah, that'd be a good one. And then and same with Aldo, like Aldo too. So I think, no, absolutely, but it just depends on who's going to get the given path. I mean, a lot of people could be champs if they get the opportunity, but now, if you line up everyone in the weight class, I don't think no. I mean, he couldn't go through everybody, but I think that he could get there with the right matchups and a good day of performing.
Do you guys think he has to go through a Jan or a Sandhagen to get that title fight, or do you think it's the opposite? He needs to jockey around those guys and not fight those guys.
I think Dominic is a horrible matchup for Jan because I felt like Jan was too slow in the first round. The only reason he hit me in the second is I got too comfortable. I was like, dude, this guy's too slow. I think TJ, Cody, and Dominic will all be really bad matchups for Jan. And then I think guys like Marais is a good matchup for him. And I think the guys that stand and duke it out, you know.
Yeah.
But the guys that are fast and elusive and intelligent, I mean, I'm 40. You know, I was faster than him.
I think what's interesting about Dom too is his style. Like, there's certain guys whose style don't age well. Like, you see guys who get in there and just are in dogfights every fight, or who really rely on like their athletic ability, or who really rely on being the fastest, hardest hitting guy. Like, those guys don't usually age as well as someone like Dom, who doesn't take damage, who basically Dom can keep fighting the way he fights for as long as he can keep a really good gas tank. Like, he's so elusive and he's constantly moving. As long as he has the gas tank to do that, I think he can give people problems. Like, his style isn't like, I'm the fastest, I'm the most athletic, I have, like, you know, he's not barreling through guys. He's being elusive. He's pot shotting. He's making sure to not take damage. He's timing the little weird head to the wrong side takedowns, those money shot takedowns. Like, he has, I think, the style to age well for sure. But
yeah, I agree with that.
But it
minus
his
body falling apart.
Yeah,
falling apart.
Yeah, for sure. The boy's got some. As a guy with knee problems, that boy's got some knee problems. Sure.
Well, and it was his rotator cuff, the last injury too, right? It wasn't even his knees this time. Something like that. But anyway, thank you for the question, Casey. You got any more for the gentleman here?
Yeah, let me bring something up.
Ask me to save how to save a bunch of money on your car insurance.
Ooh, that's good. Ooh, at From the Seaside, which fight made you the most emotional and why? I don't know if they're talking about one of your own fights or a fight you were watching, so you can answer this however you want, Uriah. I'll start with you. What fight made you the most emotional and why?
Probably my retirement fight was, I just knew that I didn't have to retire. I feel like I had a lot more in the tank, but I felt like it was a good time. And it was the first fight in the new arena that's kind of saved our city, which we almost lost our Sacramento Kings to a different state. And our mayor at the time really rallied up and got that thing built. It was just – I was kind of – at that time, I was chasing, like, getting motivated. Not that I have a hard time getting motivated to train or actually getting in there to fight per se, but, like, you know, the hair used to stand up on my neck, and I used to get some, you know, butterflies and whatnot. And I wasn't able to get that. I would go up and try to fight Frankie at a higher weight class, or I'd, you know, get in another title fight, but I just wasn't having the – excitement as I had it as a younger fighter. So I was kind of chasing that, and that retirement fight brought all that back for me.
Andre, same question. Which fight made you the most emotional? It doesn't even have to be one of your own fights. It could be any fight out there.
It's hard to narrow it down. I'll give you like a couple quick answers. My own fight was the fight in Sacramento. Being able to fight in my hometown. I hadn't got to fight in Sacramento in like 7 years or six years since I'd been in the UFC. And then I got to fight in the new arena in front of everyone. My dad had just got out of prison after like 17 years. And it was like him and my mom and my sister sitting next to each other, like, you know, with really good, like, basically front row seats. I like hopped over the ring, the cage, and like the first people I saw, I didn't really have a game plan. I just hopped over the cage because I was losing my mind. And the first people I saw were, the wounded vets from Ranger Road. So I just gave him a big hug and got snatched up by the commission security guys and got in trouble, but it was worth it. Sacramento was my favorite fight of mine so far. Faber's retirement fight was really emotional. There've been a couple, man. Cody beating Cruz, me and Faber were fucking half drunk, hugging each other, screaming, and fucking. it was just a really cool moment to see my boy manifest something that he'd been working hard on. And there's a couple negatives too. I won't go into them, but anytime my friends lose a fight, it hurts me for a day straight. I'm just paying. So fighting's a really, people don't like to talk about it, but fighting's fucking emotional, man. Fighting is really emotional, dude. Fighting, you either get to be a hero or you lose, and there's no in between. So fighting for me is, I'm a pretty emotional guy, man. Fighting's really emotional for me.
You're right. What's been the most emotional you've gotten watching a fight?
Geez, you know, actually, you know, when TJ when TJ won the title, that was a big one for all of us. When Cody beat Dom, you know, I had with Joseph Benavidez, there's been two fights that Joseph was right there for the title. The first one was against Dominic Cruz. You know, it was just me and Joseph in his room afterwards, and just, you know, he in his mind was going to win that fight, and he was just pouring his heart out about all the things he wanted to say afterwards and who he's going to think. And, you know, it was that was kind of an emotional time. And also when we fought in Sacramento, it was like I had a big win and then Joseph had a big loss in Sacramento against Michael McDonald, and he fought Demetrius Johnson. That was another one that was really hard to watch. And I felt like a big up and then a big down because he was right after me. But, you know, all the ones where you're tied close to people, sure. And you know how much hard work they put into things and how monumental it is for the clan. You know, we got a bunch of people involved in things. And yeah. And so we've all helped each other. And, you know, you win and lose together, you know.
Yeah, I think people don't realize how much of a team sport this is. Like, I mean, some people it's not. There's guys in Vegas who train at the PI and they grapple here and they do MMA here and they do boxing sparring here and they have like four or five gyms. But for guys who do it like, you know, like team, like we do at Team Alpha Male, or I'm sure at Jackson's or Novo and Yao or a team like that where it's like your team, your home team. It's a team sport, man. It's emotional. And anytime one of your friends wins or loses, it's fucking big for everybody.
Yeah, I think it's crazy that Uriah, you bring up the TJ win when he beat Brow, because, you know, obviously so much has changed since then. But it's this amazing frozen moment, like you bring it up. And I think a lot of people, when they talk about an emotional moment, a lot of people would mention that. Because, yeah, you guys were so high for the time. It was such a crazy thing that happened. And again, even though things are different now, anyone can go back and kind of watch that moment. And it's kind of always there. And I wonder, I just can't imagine how surreal it is for you and Joseph and everyone else involved in that camp, again, at the time. But I can say for the rest of us, like that was also really, really something. It just must be so strange for you to ever, whenever that replay comes on, because that fight is replayed quite a bit.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. And you know, it's funny because I had actually stepped in on short notice because Dominic Cruz had been injured. The fight Burrell, so I took it. I had a torn something in my knee. I took it on 2 weeks' notice, and I can't remember what injury I had. I think maybe a hamstring. I can't remember what the injury was, but I took that short notice. And then it was like the controversial one where I put my thumbs up and Herb still stopped the fight. And I'm like, dude, I have my friggin' thumb up.
Oh, terrible. You know?
And after that fight, I said, hey, guys. Instead of being, I want a rematch, blah, 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 I said, hey, guys, here's TJ, you know, whatever. Then I went to Dana's office, and I pitched him on TJ and told a bunch of TJ stories and everything else. So I really had a hand in that thing, making the thing happen. And so having it come to fruition was cool. And then, you know, you fast forward to the situation now, and it's like, you know, is what it is. You know, it's the – what is it? The snake and the turtle? The snake and the frog? You ever hear
snake
that?
Snake and the frog. Well, yeah, snake and the frog, snake and the turtle, yeah.
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 But anyway, it's all good.
And Jose, I'll just say my most traumatic fight ever, emotional, but I'll say it's traumatic, was probably the first time our producer Casey ever yelled at me. Probably the first time we ever worked together and had some harsh words for me. So I have not had a fight like these two, but I'll just say we have our own squabbles here at MMA Fighting, and I cried for at least a day. It was
everyone has their own battles, brother.
It's tough.
Yeah, he's very mean director back there. But speaking of the mean director, Casey, any more questions? I know we got about 10 minutes left.
Yeah. All right, one more. Let me pull something.
Thanks for the questions. He said.
What is this?
Okay. From Average Joe Art on Twitter, and I'm gonna give this guy a shout out. He has a lot of followers on Twitter. Does a lot of fan art. I know Israel Adesanya was wearing one of his shirts at a media day once. So give him a look if you haven't. Actually, Andre does a lot of comic book fan art, so go scope this guy out. Yeah, he did a fantastic Judge Dredd the other day.
What's his name?
Jay Romero at Average Joe Art on Instagram and Twitter. Phenomenal guy, too. Huge MMA fan. His question, I've always wanted to know why champions don't wear or at least bring their belts out with them to the cage, especially when the modern belt now
being replaced by having a jewel inserted for each defense. I've had some casual fans get confused as to who the champ is. So, Uriah, you've been champ. How come fighters don't bring out their belts to the octagon?
I didn't even notice they don't. I'm not sure. I mean, for me, I would just say when you're about to fight, you're just thinking about everything except for holding a belt, you know. Sure. You're thinking about, you know, visualizing your win, and you're thinking about, like, getting warmed up and everything else. It's just, you know, you don't want to have to deal with the belt.
Yeah.
Well, the thing that comes to mind is I think John Jones fought Shogun the first time, and Shogun walked out with a belt, and John Jones said it made him that much more motivated to, like, kick his ass. So maybe yeah. it backfired for Shogun right there.
Yeah. I think MMA is just less, like, you see boxing, they do it, I think, right? Like, guys walking yeah. up behind them, holding up the belts. Like, I think that MMA is just less theatrical. There's less frills and tassels and robes. It's less like, dude, we're about to fucking try to kill each other with basically no gloves on. Like, there's very little, like, there's very little theater. Like, it's definitely like, a spectacle. Like, it definitely has that entertainment value to it, but there's a lot less, like, theater to it. It's like, let's get right to it, you know? Like, it's let's get right to the fight. I think that's the sentiment for a lot of you guys.
If I remember correctly, Carmichael Dave brought my belt out when I fought Jens Pulver in Sacramento. He's a local Sacramento news, like, sports sure. guy.
Yeah, yeah.
And he might be national now, I don't know. But he also, I went to elementary school with him and his sister, and he came out and carried the belt. I forgot about that. The only reason I thought about that is because you're mentioning this right now. So it's happened on occasion.
Yeah, Connor, I believe Connor actually had his cornerman carry both of his UFC belts out before he fought Mayweather. So if you go watch that replay, you see two UFC gold belts
yeah.
Being paraded behind him on his way to the ring.
More of a boxing thing, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going rogue here, guys. I'm going to throw in one more question. I'll have to fight producer Casey again later. We fight all the time. It's fine. I know he said that was supposed to be the last question, but there was one that was, it's from Sean Denny on Twitter at Denny Rants. In honor of Feely, Touchy Feely, what are your favorite MMA nicknames? And the California Kid, also a great nickname. So what are some nicknames you guys enjoy?
I know there was a little rivalry, but we're actually cool now. So we've been cool for a long time. So I'll say Uncle Creepy is one of them, obviously. Uncle Creepy's a great
yeah.
one.
Yeah.
Uncle Creepy's a great nickname. Well, I can't really think of any other ones. Uncle Creepy's a good one. Anybody else want to help me out here? Throw some stuff.
I've got some gems for you guys after. Go ahead.
What's the guy? The secret weapon, Pete Spratt. The secret weapon.
Yeah, yeah.
That was like a sarcastic one. Like, you'd always like have the kid that was on the bench be like the secret weapon stuff.
Yeah. Violent Bob Ross is a good one.
Oh,
Violent Bob
yeah.
Ross is a good one. Yeah.
Does Buffer actually announce him as that? Does he actually say the violent? He does he?
Yes, he 100% does. I talked to him, and he said fans think his real name is Robert because of that. Like, it's his name is Luis, but people call him Robert, like, in the casinos when they see him.
Bruce Leroy is a good one.
Bruce Leroy is a phenomenal yes. one.
Yeah, especially if you like that movie,
mm-hmm.
showing up, who's the master?
All right, I got some gems for you guys. Obviously, on the regional scene, you got all kinds of crazy stuff. I don't know if you've heard of these guys. There's a gentleman named Ladarius Jackson who goes by the Limitless Nuclear Bombs. Ladarius, the Limitless Nuclear Bombs Jackson. It's a mouthful.
That's incredible, yeah.
This might be one of the worst. Jordan Winsky, I think he's a friend of Sam Alvey's. He goes by Jordan, I'm gonna Winsky. Jordan, what do you think?
Hey,
you
like that? Smiling
yeah.
Sam's good,
yeah.
too.
Yeah, Silent Sam's all right. Bill Algio, he fought on Contender Series last year, goes by Senor Perfecto. And Spike Carlisle, he fights out of San Diego. You guys might know him. He just had a successful UFC debut in February. He goes by the Alpha Ginger. But
nice.
There's an even better redhead than that. Our Canada's own Rick Pfeiffer, who goes – and you probably heard of this guy. The Ginger with intent to injure.
That's pretty incredible.
I just remembered one more. There's a fighter. I think his name's John Castaneda. He goes by Sexy Mexi.
Yeah.
Sexy 100%. Mexi fights for Combate.
Yeah.
Solid.
That is awesome. I've always been a big fan of Dean of Mean, Keith Jardine. That's always my go-to one.
Dude, it was that's the worst fucking nickname. That's a good one. Dean of Mean. That's the worst fucking nickname.
No, hey, he's a working actor.
He does a lot of
movies. Yeah,
he was him actually Andre. Killing it, dude. Andre, you ever read Sweet Tooth?
Bruh, come on, bruh.
I was about to say, I thought I saw it somewhere up there. I ran into Keith. He was at the UFC Phoenix fight card that you were at, and he was reading Sweet Tooth because he was about to go audition. I don't know if he got the role. I haven't talked to him since. But that was going to be a Netflix show that he wanted to be on, so he was doing research, sitting cross-legged reading Sweet Tooth. Of course, I had to go chat him about Jeff Lemire.
That's a moment. That's a fucking moment in history. You got to watch.
I know.
Are they going to do a Sweet Tooth show?
Netflix.
Oh my God! Yes, dude.
Whew. Keith, he got to do that. He got to work with Paul Thomas Anderson. He did that Inherent Vice movie. So he got to do a scene with like Joaquin Phoenix. And I was like, so Andre, you know, you might make fun of his name, but you might end up, in a movie with him. So,
dude, I have immense respect for him. So as a fighter, I have immense respect for him. Mm-hmm. What he's done in Hollywood, I think him and Jay Haran are the best examples of like guys who have just like been fucked. Dude, Jay Haran and him have both been killing it. Like, I've seen them in so many things, but still, his nickname is the worst nickname I've ever
seen. You gotta keep it real.
I say that as a guy named Touchy Feely, and I also say that as a guy who has immense respect for him. But holy shit, dude, the Dean of Mean? Holy shit.
Oh my gosh.
Someone in our comments says Sexy Yama is still the GOAT nickname.
Great name.
That's a good one, too. I was gonna say Sexy Yama.
But I like Sexy Hara better for my boy. Taruto Ishihara, Sexy Hara. I like that one.
Yeah, that's cool. Casey, I know we're running up any time. We got any more questions for these two gentlemen before we let them go?
Yeah, we got one. I think we can get one more in here.
Fight Island from Rob Holland. If Dana White was running a Fight Island tournament as a cover for a drug trade and prostitution, like in Enter the Dragon, which fighter would you send as an undercover agent / fighter to infiltrate this tournament? Someone else than the obvious Bruce Leroy. There you go. Also, who would be a perfect Williams and Roper? And of course, who is White's right-hand man, Bolo? So basically, they're asking you to like fantasy matchmake and Enter the Dragon tournament with UFC fighters.
That's a good question. I think what's his name, the karate guy from what's his name, who am I thinking of? Stephen Thompson would be a good guy to infiltrate, because I feel like he's got a clean like look, but I bet you he's got a little dirty to him too. I don't know, but, you know.
Yeah.
He's a single guy. He's getting older. You know, he knows what he's doing.
Yeah. I think Bolo, if I was going to cast Bolo, it'd be, Yo Romero.
Oh, my God. I didn't even think about that, but that is right on the money right there.
I think I'd cast Yo Romero.
I think we got to toss Stylebender somewhere in there. I feel like he's been in a tournament, a couple one night tournaments in the past.
Stylebender's like the final boss, dude. Like, you have to get past him and you barely survive.
Sure.
Yeah.
You're muted, AK.
I think you guys are missing the obvious secret agent choice, because we all know she's a Russian spy anyway. One Valentina Shevchenko. I think you send her in there. Yeah.
She scares the living shit out of me, though. I'm sure she's a sweet lady, but she scares the holy hell out of me, dude. I'd have to cast her as like a villain, like a
femme fatale.
Yeah, she takes her stilettos off and throws it through a man's head or something. You
know? She's in an upcoming movie with Halle Berry, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah.
Oh yes. Yeah.
I saw them training at Henzo's, dude. Halle Berry can fucking fight, dude.
Yeah, she breaks brick, and I know Valentina wants to play like a female James Bond in the future. So you're not wrong. You're not wrong there, AK. But I think we're running up on time. So Uriah and Andre, I know you spoke about your movie earlier, but for those of the fans that joined since then, tell us about the movie one more time and where they can find it.
It's Green Rush. Like I said, it's based on a real event. And it's got a robbery at a marijuana farm in Northern California, where Andre and I are both reign supreme. And you know, you're gonna really love it. It's the type of movie you're gonna want to watch twice. There's a lot of twists and turns in there where you're gonna catch things the second time. Andre killed it. Guy's a natural. I mean, he spoke to me a long time ago about wanting to get into the acting game, so I've always kept that in mind. And it's a real passion project. Everyone involved, most of the characters in there, the scenes were and the characters are written for them specifically, which is also really rare. So go ahead and check it out and enjoy the ride.
Andre, anything you want to add as a man that they're going to see on screen?
Yeah, man. Support support independent wrestling. Or no. I meant rent the movie, check it out. All you trolls can tweet me if I suck, but if I do a good job, you have to tweet me I did a good job too. You have to be fair. So rent the movie tomorrow. Hit those air horns. Rent the movie tomorrow and let us know what you thought.
Well, thank you so much, gentlemen. I'm sure after this, a bunch of people, it's not like they can go anywhere, so they can just go to Redbox, find it, bring it back, watch it, pass it on. Go watch Green Rush, everyone. But for Jose, that's Alex, that's Andre, that's Uriah. I don't know where they are on your screen, but I see them on my screens. But until Wednesday, we'll be back at our normal time. You can find this on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, all the podcast networks, and, of course, YouTube. But until Wednesday, we're out.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.